Despite pulling off that surprise win at the federal election, the Morrison government can't escape its recent spate of leadership upheaval, which we now learn could have turned into a constitutional crisis. In the latest account of that turmoil that enveloped the government last August, we now read that the former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is accused of bringing to bear improper influence over the Governor-General in a last-ditch bid to save his job. This is according to reports in The Australian and The Nine Media. Anne Toomey is Professor of Constitutional Law at the University of Sydney. Anne Toomey, welcome.
Thank you.
The inference from these two separate reports today is that Malcolm Turnbull had spoken to the Governor-General and told him not to commission Peter Dutton as Prime Minister should Peter Dutton win the Liberal leadership ballot. That's the impression anyway, apparently, according to several ministers, including the Attorney-General Christian Porter, that he had discussed this with Peter Cosgrove, with the Governor-General. If that occurred, and this could well be disputed by Malcolm Turnbull, and we don't know yet, he hasn't spoken yet, would it have been improper for a Prime Minister to raise this with the Governor-General?
Well, it certainly wouldn't be improper, but there is a fundamental constitutional question about the extent to which the Prime Minister can advise as in relation to his or her successor. So one argument, and the one that I support, is that no, an outgoing Prime Minister cannot formally advise the Governor-General as to who to appoint in a manner that's binding on the Governor-General. And the reason for that is the principle of responsible government, because the outgoing Prime Minister is no longer responsible to the Parliament for that advice. And that's why the appointment of a Prime Minister is regarded as a reserve power, because it's a power that can be exercised by the Governor-General in their discretion without advice. Now, having said that, that's my view, and I think it's the right view. But in previous controversies, particularly the one concerning Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard, I believe the Solicitor General at the time had taken a different view, and that was that the Prime Minister is entitled to advise the Governor General as to who his or her successor should be. So that would have left things in a difficult position, because if the current Solicitor General had faced, on the one hand, potentially advice of a previous Solicitor General that the Prime Minister could advise the Governor General in a binding way about this, but it also read my book, which I do believe was floating around Canberra at a rate of knots during this crisis, and seeing the opposite view, he would have then had a dilemma as to what he might have advised if the Governor General had asked. And then there was a subsequent question as well as to, well, who does advise the Governor General on legal issues? Should he take advice from the Solicitor General or the Attorney General or even the Prime Minister as to these legal issues? And this all arose back again in the time of Gough Whitlam as well.
Yeah, or so the Chief Justice. Yes. Well, that's right. Who does talk to them? Well, the Chief Justice.
Indeed. Well, I think these days, the one thing that we know is that the Chief Justice should stay out of it.
He's not the right person.
Simply for political reasons, best not to be involved. But there is an ongoing argument about the role of the Solicitor General, for example, in advising the Governor-General, or whether the Governor-General takes, you know, advice from outside people. Have to say, in all of this, I didn't get a phone call, Fran, so I'm not the missing piece in advice in any of this. But as I say, I do know my book on the reserve powers was copied kindly by someone in Canberra and then sent around to everybody. So lots of sales that didn't happen there.
Okay, so given that, given about your book being photocopied and being bandied about, it is obvious that this sort of conversation was being had.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, in your view, if it had occurred, would we have been, and it came to pass, would we have been at the point of constitutional crisis? How would you describe that?
Well, I don't know whether it's necessarily a crisis, but it certainly would have been a controversy. So basically, what should have happened, here's my view of what should have happened. In the circumstances, I don't believe that the Prime Minister did have a right to give binding advice to the Governor-General. So on what basis then should the Governor-General have chosen the Prime Minister? Well, the basic principle is that they choose whoever has the confidence of the lower house. Now, there's a tricky thing here if you think that the person who's saying they have the confidence of the lower house actually isn't a member of it because they're disqualified. Well, that is obviously a factor that you'd consider. But basically, if I were Cosgrove and if someone had asked me, I think what I probably would have told him is to say, yes, I will appoint you, but on two conditions. The first is you have to agree in advance that you will face Parliament to see whether you have the confidence of the House. Okay, so that way at least you know whether he's got the support of the lower house. And secondly, given that there's a cloud remaining over your eligibility, that you then get the House to refer the matter to the High Court to resolve one way or another. Now, he could still be Prime Minister while that happens. You could appoint him as Prime Minister, but you'd still want this to be resolved, because the last thing you want to do is carry on with a Prime Minister that everybody doesn't, you know, is doubting whether or not they're valid or not.
Sure, but according to this, the Attorney-General told the Prime Minister that he was wrong at law when he said that the Governor-General would not and should not appoint Peter Dutton as Prime Minister, even if he's elected. The Attorney-General said his view was, and he got advice on this, the only test for the Governor-General should apply was whether the new leader had the confidence of the House. Everything else is irrelevant. Do you agree with that, that Malcolm Turnbull's interpretation would have been wrong at law?
Well, I agree with the Attorney-General that the issue is who has the confidence of the lower house, so I think he's right on that. And again, you'd want Parliament to show who had the confidence because, you know, in these fractured circumstances, you might have had defectors going one way or another. So if I were Cosgrove, I want the House to actually determine that. But as part and parcel of that issue of do you have the confidence of the lower house has to also be a question of, well, are you actually a member of it? Now, that's not something for the Governor-General to decide. That's something for the court, as the Court of Disputed Returns, to decide. So you wouldn't want him usurping the power of the court and making his own decision about whether or not Mr. Dutton was a member of the House, particularly given that it was not a lay down as air issue. It was a very contentious issue. So clearly that was something that a court would have to decide. So the real question there is how much should the Governor-General in the circumstances have been nudging to make sure that it actually is resolved and that you didn't end up going on for a period of time with the question still in the air. So should he have pressured Dutton to say that he'd make sure the House referred him to the High Court so that the High Court could make the final decision? Because that would be the resting place of where that decision ought to have been made.
Okay. Anne Toomey, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Anne Toomey, Professor of Law at the University of Sydney Law School.